And we're going to jump into the situation involving Torrey Greene at this point, because we do have Tommy Sorensen here to talk about it. But basically, as I mentioned before, there were four separate accounts that were reported to police here in Logan that involved sexual assault involving one player, or it said one student. The initial report came out because they weren't going to release information on a crime that wasn't, you know, when there weren't charges brought up. And Tommy here has done some research a lot over the last night and this morning, and want to kind of get your perspective and all the details that you have about it so far.
Well, to clarify, I don't have a ton yet. Most of what I know is based on what the Tribune reported a couple weeks ago, which I'm assuming you've been talking about.
Touched on it. We didn't get too in-depth on it because I didn't want to, like, double go over things. So we do want to talk about what the Tribune has shared.
Okay. So as you just mentioned, there was four women who accused a specific individual of sexual assault. Three of them were students. The four all went to the Logan police. And then the three who were students also, through a circuitous route, I guess, ended up reporting it to the school. And then, as you mentioned it, the information came out yesterday that it was actually Torrey, former football player for the Aggies. So, there was a lot of reaction after the Tribune's initial report, the unnamed report, because there was like four independent accusations against this individual and no charges were filed, and the school also didn't proceed with any disciplinary action, right? The concern is, or I don't know if concern's the right word, what we're trying to do, so the Tribune has done their work to report on it, and they did put a lot of work into it. It's obviously, I mean, they requested the records and the comb through those and whatnot. From our perspective with the Statesman, which is looking into it, we're trying to, I guess, fact check is a way to put it. Like, we would just want to make sure everything happened the way it's been reported. And part of the concern is that the way it was framed, it seems like there was a lot of negligence. A lot of people haven't been doing what they're supposed to, and that's possible. But there's also the, I don't know, sometimes it's hard to actually do something, you know, from the police perspective, unless there's actually evidence, it's hard for them to put a case together.
Now, I don't know if we have any way of knowing this, but there, these women that came forward, was this all within the last, I don't know, like year?
He was here. It was like about a year and a half.
It was
a
year and a half?
No, the four that came forward was between January and toward the end of November of 2015.
Okay.
The one of them went to the police. The first one in January went to the police more or less immediately after, within a couple weeks of it happening. And the detective put together his case report and then handed it to the prosecutor, who looked over it and decided not to pursue it. See, again, that's a situation, like, it sounds like, it's like, whoa, why are they not doing that? There probably wasn't enough evidence. You know?
Yeah.
That's what, from the Statesman's perspective, that's what we're going to find out. We're going to go talk to them and ask. And so the files were, or the, it was dropped in April of last year, right? And then there was another attack that occurred during the summer, and then two more during the fall semester. All three of them went to the police around November of last year. Right. One of those three, was the case was sent to the prosecutor. The other two, it was not, for varying reasons. One of them wasn't actually in Logan's jurisdiction. There's other reasons why it wasn't actually sent to the prosecutor. And then the one that was, prosecutor looked over it again, decided not to pursue it, and it was dropped in, I believe, January of this year, if I'm remembering correctly.
And these women didn't know each other, obviously. They
not beforehand.
Okay.
So
they still might not know each other. They might have had individual, like, separate like interviews with the Salt Lake Tribune. I don't know that they've ever actually met.
Yeah.
So.
And I'm not sure if that's relevant, to be honest.
Yeah, it's not.
But anyway, so from the police perspective, we want, you know, as like a member of this community, I want to see something happen. But unless there's evidence and support from the accusers and everyone involved, it's hard for the police to actually put together a case, right?
Yeah.
That'll game. My concern, I guess, is from the university side. And this is, again, we have a lot of questions we have to ask. Title IX is known widely, particularly among sports fans, because it mandates, part of what it does is mandates that there needs to be equal treatment for men and women in the athletics, right? Same number of scholarships and whatnot, which is really good. Like, it's done a lot of good since its inception. But it also handles or addresses how schools address sexual assault accusations and whatnot. And again, there's a lot of minutia to it. There's a lot of details we don't know. It looks like the school received information on at least three of those cases, the three that were students. It looks like it was reported to the school, or it was reported to people who should have reported it to the school.
Yeah.
And according to the Tribune said, based on what they saw, they didn't think the school looked into it. In an interview with Green, he said that the school talked to him once. So there was like some, it looks to me like the school either looked at the evidence and decided there wasn't enough to pursue it, or didn't take it seriously or something. And that's where the questions come up for me.
Yeah.
And that's where we have to talk to them and find out for sure what happened. But then they also have to balance they're trying to balance the privacy and stuff. Unfortunately, that a lot of times prevents answers from being given.
Yeah.
Anyway, so does that kind of make sense what I'm...
Yeah.
Yeah, that does.
Yeah, definitely. It's a strange situation, and one that you would hope that you wouldn't have to deal with, that you'd hope that would never become an issue here on your own campus. But unfortunately, it has become that. And definitely at this point, we want to, you know, find out all the answers. And I know that you guys are going to work really hard to, you know, get as many as you possibly can.
Yeah.
And to kind of find out, you know, is, you know, the Salt Lake Tribune's report, is it correct? Is that how everything went down? Did the police have a different side that they share, like, this is why this didn't happen and all that? And maybe the details that will make it so it doesn't seem like the police were trying to sweep it under the rug, or the university, or anything like that. You know, all those kind of questions you guys are looking to answer, to my understanding.
Yeah.
And so definitely... Go ahead. Sorry.
The Tribune's done their work. We're still looking to find more information, I suppose. And so I don't want to make assumptions or like express opinions that haven't been validated. But it seems to me like, I don't know, I'm not sure that there's like some nefarious work.
Yeah, yeah.
Here, you know what I mean?
And that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, no.
It's just the question, like, is this off or whatever? And your point is to go and find out if it is or if it isn't.
Yeah. I think the problem is that this isn't, I mean, it involved a football player. This isn't a football problem. This isn't a Utah State problem. This is a nationwide problem. There's just the way we handle sexual assault on college campuses is not very good. There aren't a lot of clear avenues to report it or whatever. There's not a lot of clear definition of how it's handled. I mean, from the disciplinary side, there's not, you know, oftentimes there's not like trained professionals making the decisions. They, you know, it's a panel of university people looking over it. So there's a lot of, I don't know. There's just a lot that we aren't doing correctly with it. And I think all of those things coming together gives us situations like this that looks really bad and is, assuming all of those accusations are accurate, that's bad. That, like, nothing happens. But there's a lot of stuff involved in this that's causing those situations, putting us in unfortunate positions.
Yeah, and unfortunately, this instance of sexual assault is far too prevalent. I mean, it shouldn't happen ever, but it happens way more and doesn't go investigated sometimes, and sometimes it doesn't go reported because people either don't know how or don't feel like it's worth it. Because, like, for example, in the report by the Salt Lake Tribune, you know, it seemed like each one of these girls felt that it didn't matter that they reported it because nothing really has happened yet, as far as legally speaking.
Well, I think the other thing, though, is the reporting chain of command is another thing. Because, and this happens in broader cases than just sexual assault, but it's like you tell somebody, they're supposed to tell somebody else in a university setting. And it's just that can get lost.
Yeah, you know? And someone could forget to do it, and then it gets, like, lost in the midst of everything else. And, I mean, and unfortunately, that sometimes happens.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I guess it... I mean, obviously, the university has to have its own discipline, but I don't know, should that... I'm just wondering if that maybe should be changed, where do you just go to the local police and have them do the whole thing start to finish if there's going to be a reporting problem on a school's end? I mean, I guess this is getting more territory than just sexual assault, because, I mean, it's like you had the molestation case at Penn State, where there's evidence that somebody knew for a while and didn't report something, but obviously that's maybe getting too broad.
I think some of the concern with that is, like I've been saying, like, legally, a lot of times it's hard to put together a case with a crime like this. You know, there's usually not witnesses, and it's an emotional event for
the victim.
For the victim, and so,
and also,
they oftentimes don't come forward until the evidence is gone.
Yeah, and if they don't come forward pretty early, there's not going to be any. I mean, there's, like, obviously there's going to be biological evidence, most or some of the time at least, because I doubt that you're going to be able to put a condom on or anything like that. But if you wait because you're scared, you know, that evidence can disappear, like, and there's not a way to prove anything. And unfortunately, that happens a lot, that they do wait, and so they can't have an effective rape kit that they take. And so, yeah, a lot of it, unfortunately, it's hard to get evidence on these, especially if you wait. And that might be the biggest problem facing these investigations on this kind of crime.
It frustrates me because on a personal level, I know people close to me who have experienced sexual assault.
Yeah.
And again, like, it's hard to legally put together cases. But then when we have situations like happened with that Stanford situation that came out a couple months ago.
Yeah.
And they actually have evidence and everything, and then he gets off with 3 months, right?
He's
given 6 months, then gets off early for good behavior. Like, that, on a personal level, infuriates me.
Yeah, me too.
Because, like, it's such a hard problem to address in a lot of ways. There's so much confusion with it. We're all, like, looking at it in different ways. And I think we all agree, like, hey, we shouldn't have people raping people, right? Like, I don't think there's anyone like, no, we should allow that. Like, everyone's against it, and there's just... We just are not addressing it very well.
Yeah.
And then we have a case like that, and he gets off just because he's got money.
Yeah, and it kind of perpetuates it, because, like, if he were to get a very severe punishment where he's going to be in jail for years, you know, other athletes particularly that are prone to do this kind of thing, and obviously this isn't the majority or anything, but there are some, and the other ones will see that and be like, okay, you know, I'm not going to get away with this. It's not going to be okay if I do this. Because some of them, they have that entitlement that, you know, I'm an athlete, and so I'm going to be fine, and nothing's going to happen because, you know, I'm an athlete, and people will just let me, you know, go free afterwards because, you know, they have, like, a different standard for athletes.
I'm going to butt in here.
Absolutely.
I'm not sure how much an impact incarcerating one individual actually has on others. There's a lot of confusion in the data.
Yeah.
The point of that is that there's not a clear correlation between, like, if you're hard on people who commit a crime, it doesn't seem to necessarily have an impact on other people who might commit that crime. So from that perspective, I'm not sure that that actually would. Like, I'm not sure other athletes would be like, oh, I'm going to choose to not rape this individual because of what I saw. But what it does do, most often, particularly with a crime like this, it's one individual committing multiple offenses.
Yeah.
I mean, we see we've got four women over the course of a year who accused, and who knows if there's more. I don't know. Yeah,
there could absolutely be more.
So it's a serial offense, right? It's the same person. So incarcerated, I'm not sure, would, like, deter other people from doing it. But it would get that individual off the streets, right?
And it would, I think it would start to change the culture as well, though, because at this point, when you give leniency to someone for something like this, which I don't think that leniency should be should be given, because this is a very serious thing.
There shouldn't be leniency if there's solid evidence.
Yeah.
See, the problem is I'm not sure that there is. Because I think from the school's perspective, they should have looked into it, and I'm not sure they did. But, like, legally, what I read in the Tribune report, I think the police did what they were supposed to.
Yeah.
I don't know that there was anything more they could have done to be with the evidence that I'm assuming they had based on timing, and there was, like, varying amounts of support along the way.
Yeah.
There could have been maybe some more follow-up by the police. They hadn't, according to the police reports, they hadn't contacted anyone since January of this year. The Tribune did their report last month in July. So there was about 6 months from the last time they tried to contact anyone. So maybe they should have followed up more. But, like, over the course of 2015, I think the police did everything they were supposed to.
Yeah.
To really address something like this, it is a cultural problem.
Yeah.
And we've used that phrase. And it, like, all levels. Like, I went to Walmart the other day, and I was walking through the parking lot. It was late. It was like 9:30 or 10, right? So it was dark and stuff. This woman came out of the store. A young woman came out of the store, got into her car, backed up, started pulling away, and there was a bunch of boys coming from their vehicle toward the store. I was leaving the store, so I was coming toward them. And they were all, like, late high school, maybe early college age, right?
Yeah.
And they were rowdy and talking like boys do, but then they started, like, making comments to each other about the girl in this vehicle, and then one of them, like, went over and was, like, hit the window and was like, hey, girl, you're pretty, or something, like some cat call.
Yeah.
That's, like, part of the culture, right? That's, like, it's stuff like that. It's, like, this unwanted, like, forcing himself upon her, and I'm sure she was freaked out. I mean, this kid, like, starts smacking her window at 10 o'clock in the Walmart parking lot.
Yeah.
Trying to cat call. And so she pulls away, but then I didn't do anything either.
Yeah.
Like, I'm part of that problem. It's like, it's all of us, right?
Yeah. And yeah, but really, like, just with the Stanford thing, I think when they give him leniency, it doesn't help.
No, it doesn't
with the problem at all. And so I think if they are more strict, obviously it's gonna, he's gonna be paying for the crimes that he committed, and also those that he committed to. If it was just the one girl, or if there were more that weren't reported, they get some closure, and they will feel a little bit more safe because he's not out there. And I feel like there has to be kind of, when there is evidence and when you can prove that it happened, you definitely, like, you should not be leaning on them, especially not if it's just because they're an athlete. And unfortunately, a lot of people see it that way, as, you know, athletes are going to get off because, you know, we pay tons of money to watch athletes play all the time, you know, between football and basketball and even baseball and hockey. Like, we pay tons of money for athletes, and so for a lot of people, they hate sports because they see, you know, these rare cases where there's an athlete that is involved with this sort of thing. And if they get off early or whatever, they have leniency, then it's going to perpetuate that, because they're like, oh, it's just because they're an athlete. So obviously it should be all cases, but especially when it's something public like that, you can't be lenient when it's proven that they committed that crime. And when you get six months and then get out early, like you said, for something that is as serious as sexual assault, to me is just unbelievable.
See, in that case,
unfortunately, it is believable, but it shouldn't be.
Yeah. In that case, I'm not sure how much his status as an athlete played into it. I think it leans into other larger socioeconomic discussions. But I agree with you that that does happen. And that this frustrates me. I mean, we're on a sports show, so I guess we should take it in a little bit of a more sports-focused direction. But there's... I mean, we see it in the NFL, and Ethan, you and I have talked about this, too. Like, how... what really matters is how good you are. I mean, if Torrey Greene was a first-round draft pick, would the Falcons have cut him?
Probably not.
When this came out? I don't know. I don't want to, like, assume things on them. I know if he played for, like, the Dallas Cowboys, he wouldn't have, right? Yeah. They went and assigned Greg Hardy and brought him in after...
After he was...
Just, like, horrific allegations. I mean, Deadspin did some work on it and got the police report, posted the pictures and stuff. Just horrendous, right?
Yeah.
There's just... Stuff like that is very prevalent, and it bothers me that they... But then, on the other hand, no charges were ever... Charges were filed and then removed in Greg Hardy's case. He was never actually convicted of anything.
Yeah.
He was suspended a year by the NFL. He was never convicted of anything. Should that still follow him? That's the question.
And then and you kind of wonder...
It's a really hard conversation to figure out. I mean...
And you wonder if the charges disappeared. They weren't, like, brought to trial or whatever because he was an athlete and the person got paid off or threatened or whatever. And
that's the
unfortunately, that's a large concern. Like, you know, people will be asking the question, like, did the Utah State coaching staff know about it? You know, from what I've read, no. Coach Wells said that he didn't know until very recently, probably about the time that article came out on the Salt Lake Tribune that didn't name Torrey Greene.
Yeah, the based first on one. But the wording, I don't think he knew before then.
Yeah.
But if the university knew, even if, you know, the police maybe said that there's not enough here, should the university have done something like where, you know, you said the NFL suspending Greg Hardy for a year. Should the university have taken its own discipline even without the charges? I guess that's the issue. Cause,
how much did the university know? Mm-hmm. And this is something, again, I need to research. Because I don't want to, Utah State's a good school, right? I think there's good people here. I don't think this was intentional. I really hope it wasn't, like, a cover-up, right? Yeah. And I don't believe it was. My guess is there is a policy, there's a plan, there's steps they follow when they receive reports like this.
Yeah.
And maybe they didn't have enough information to follow it along. And that's where, as a representative of the Statesman, those are the questions we need to ask.
Yeah.
I don't know if the Tribune asked those questions or not. It wasn't laid out in the article.
Yeah.
Those are the questions we need to ask. We need to find out. And then, hopefully, in doing so, we can help take another step toward finding a better solution, a better situation for that.
Yeah.
But I don't think Wells knew. I mean, initially when I heard it, I was like, how does he not know? Like, of course he knew. But then, like, after, like, going through that article, I combed through it a few times, like, wrote some stuff down to make sure I understood. I don't think he knew. Because if it wasn't invested by the university, really, there's no like, reason to tell the coach, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what are they going to
say? Unless they, like, found something. It's like, hey, we have suspicion this person may have done that. And then you punish him, and then you find out later that they didn't actually do it. That's why you always have to be careful. There is that still innocent until proven guilty thing.
Yeah.
And so, the main thing that needs to happen is that the idea, like, it needs to change, like, that people need to understand that's not okay. And just like in the reports, you can read it on the Salt Lake Tribune's website, but it sounded like he thought it was okay because of, you know, his position from the accounts of the victims. But we're pretty much out of time right now. But I just want to end with letting everyone know that if you or anyone you know has been a victim of sexual assault, there is a hotline that you can call 24 hours a day. That is 1-800-656-4673. And call that number. You can talk to someone about it. It's anonymous. If you don't, like, because a lot of times you don't want people to know that you personally did it. And there's different information on... You know, there's a website dedicated for USU students in particular. There's the sexual assault and anti-violence information.
I'm going to interrupt you there. That's where I think I would recommend people turn.
Yeah.
Students, the Savvy Office. They have counselors. They have programs. They have, like, legally, according to the Title IX, they work with the students to come up with a situation. They can coordinate with professors to help. Like, it's a horrific experience.
And they'll give you information. They'll give you information and help you, you know, come to your own decision and what you want to do going forward. And they can help you have counseling and everything else, because obviously traumatic experience, like you're saying. And
that's one thing that I think the school looked good coming through those Tribune reports, is the students went to the Savvy Office and they received counseling. The individual at the office even like went with them to meet with police and help them through it.
And so the Savvy Office is in the Student Health and Wellness Center, which is just north of the football stadium. There's a building there where we, as students, have access to free healthcare for anything. But you can also call the office, 435-797-1510, or there's a hotline that is 435-797-7273. It spells out rape if that helps you remember it. So after 5 o'clock Monday through Friday, on weekends and on holidays, the hotline is answered by CAPSA, but during the regular hours it is answered there. So I would encourage anyone that has been a victim or knows someone that has been to seek help, because it's not something you should deal with alone. And so you got these different resources. Call the hotline if you're here at Utah State. Definitely go to this office and have someone help you, because it's a traumatic experience, and you know, I wouldn't wish that on anybody ever. So make sure that you find the help that you need, and find the help for those that maybe you know that need help that haven't really looked for it themselves. But we want to thank you all for listening.